weight, your height, your age, everything. And listen, if you don't think your age is negotiable, just go on some dating site and see what ages people give themselves. That's negotiable. Your job now is to contact every vendor and get your cost reduced in the most significant way possible without hurting the relationship. Underline that one. But don't just call. Do some research first. Find alternative, less expensive providers and be prepared to go with the alternatives. 2, start by negotiating the small, necessary expenses. You want to build your negotiation muscle. Build your way up to bigger expenses. Negotiation is a whole topic of its own, but for now, realize that being a hard ass isn't always the most effective approach. Being informed, firm, and willing to concede so both sides win is the best method. The goal is to get the same results at a lower cost. It doesn't mean that you need to stick with what you have and get it more cheaply. You can also find alternatives, perhaps a different thing, more cheaply. For example, some hotels charge for internet in the room and others don't. If you can't get a hotel to remove or reduce the in-room internet charge, get the lobby password and work from there. 3, for every expense you are able to permanently drop, put a squiggly line through it. For every expense that you can reduce, put a straight line through it. Now add up the total savings to see if you got to your number. Remember, the goal is 10% less than the operating expense tap. If you are not there yet fully, it's okay. We'll be back. For now, job done. And if you made it to your target expense reduction without going on a bender, I say job well done. Breathe for a few moments. Feel the stress of overwhelming expenses leaving you. This was a hard day, but by completing it, you have staged yourself for major profits. Now you're ready to grow your business in an efficient way. Cutting costs is embarrassing. You have a reputation. You always pay for dinner or drive the nice car. You are the nice boss who throws pizza parties and gives sweet holiday bonuses. Let me assure you, the relief you feel once you complete the debt freeze is way more powerful than the embarrassment you fear. No matter how much debt you have, know there is a way out. More than that, know that you are not the first person to be there. Many people have recovered from dire financial situations, and the key to doing that is in your hands. The new definition of success is not about the most revenue or employees or office space, but the most profit generated through the fewest employees and with the least expensive office space. Make the game of winning based upon efficiency, frugality, and innovation, not on size, flair, and looks. We, you and I, are on a mission to change the perspective of successful businesses from make a lot to save a lot. We are on a mission to eradicate entrepreneurial poverty, and to achieve that, a debt freeze is always in order. If you owe the bank $1 million. There's a saying in the banking industry, if you owe the bank $1,000, it's your problem. If you owe the bank $1 million, it's their problem. Remember Pete? After a call, he started a profit account, cut expenses like mad, and then called the bank. Almost everything is negotiable. And when you owe a bank $1 million and don't have it, they'll listen to your ideas. Pete worked out a very doable payment plan, and within 3 months had already whacked out 5% of the debt and turned a profit. And he joined an accountability group. Mine. We have been keeping each other in check for many years now. And while I am vowed to confidentiality about Pete's progress, let me just say this. It's been massive. Pete was, understandably, a quivering wreck when he called me that night many years ago. Today, he is the epitome of confidence. And Pete did it by implementing the power of small actions, a series of consistent small steps bringing about big results. Pete is far from the only one who is able to pay down $1 million debt using profit-first principles. As I was finishing the revision of this book, I received a letter from Jesse Cole, owner of the Savannah Bananas, a minor league baseball team. Jesse included his baseball card. In the picture, he's wearing a bright banana yellow suit. I was psyched. Jesse is clearly my people. Jesse's note explained that he had read Profit First a year ago, and following the system, he has taken his franchise to a new level. Because I had only 4 days left before my book, this book, was due to my publisher, I called Jesse for an interview on the spot. I had to include his story in this book. Profit First saved a baseball team? That's more than a big deal. I mean, I'm puffed out with pride right now just thinking about it. As the owner of two teams, the Savannah Bananas and the Gastonia Grizzlies, Jesse has revitalized them by shifting their focus to entertainment. While most of the considerably older team owners work on building better baseball teams, Jesse changed the goals so that the team was not just playing baseball. They were also entertaining fans. He brought in a choreographer to teach the players dances to perform on the field in between innings. By the way, he saved money. I'm saying big money on a choreographer. She was a relative. He set up granny beauty pageants and brought in interesting food, including every variation you could think of for fried, baked, boiled, smashed, sliced, and diced bananas. Within months, the franchise went from filling maybe 200 seats to selling out 4,000 seats. At this point, Jesse and his wife opted to get out from under more than $1 million in debt, which they had accrued over a mere 2 years. We thought about our quality of life, the stress we were under, the fact that we got only a couple of hours of sleep at night, and decided we would use the Profit First system to get rid of our debt, Jesse explained. It worked. We paid down a huge chunk of it, and within 2 years, we will have paid $1.3 million to the previous owners of the Grizzlies and the Bananas. We'll be 100% debt-free. Now, I want to stop right now and make a strong argument for choosing profitability even when you have debt. In fact, when you have debt, you need to be more profitable than ever. Some people say they can't be profitable until they are out of debt, but that's not true. The only way to get out of debt is by being profitable. Debt accumulates because you have more expenses than cash to pay for them, so you borrow. You get a loan, a line of credit, a stack of shiny plastic credit cards. And yet the only way to have more money than you are currently spending is to be profitable. To be clear, Jesse and his wife run two profitable baseball franchises. The distinction here is that they are using their profit distribution to eradicate debt. They are not spending out of their means. In fact, they are reaping perhaps the biggest benefit of Profit First: innovation by necessity. For example, most baseball clubs automatically purchase a ticketing system, runs around $30,000 for the season, plus kickbacks to the company for every ticket sold. Though they have the money to follow the status quo, they are profit-first entrepreneurs, and they know they had to find an alternative to the pricey ticketing system. We ended up buying 100,000 printed tickets shaped like bananas for $6,000, Jesse said. It was easy. It's on brand, and it cost a fraction of the other system. The tickets serve another purpose. They are souvenirs. The ultimate in innovation is to extract more benefit from less expensive resources. For every expense, Jesse asks himself whether it fits with who they are as a brand, entertainment over baseball, and whether he absolutely needs it. If he does need it, he finds a way to trade for it, or he gets a deep discount. And I'll give you another story. I've talked to Jesse a few times now. I think I told you earlier on, I'm going down to throw out a pitch at one of their games, the opening pitch. And he uses tons of bananas, as you can see. They cook them, slice them, dice them, and so forth. They even throw them from the stands. They have this contest. It's ridiculous. It's so funny. They call it the banana in the pants contest. And they literally have people on the upper stands throwing bananas down, and the baseball players have these supersized pants, and they try to catch the bananas in their pants. Well, those bananas, I mean, he tears through hundreds and hundreds of bananas just in all these different contests and things they're doing every single game. And he gets them for free. He brokered a deal with the person that provides the bananas to promote his supermarket in exchange. So the supermarket gets promoted, the supermarket provides the bananas for free, and boom, done deal. Profit First has encouraged Jesse, who innately is a guy who thinks outside the box, to forcibly and constantly think innovatively and outside the box. I'll tell you, if you ever get a chance to go down to Savannah, definitely get down there and stop by one of his games. You'll see a guy who's living Profit First to the fullest. He's leveraging it not just to eradicate debt, not just to be profitable, but to bring about innovations that are even better than the standard, more expensive solutions. Those tickets are such a smart example. Banana in the pants, it's a runner-up. Jesse's success is outstanding. Through his innovation and ingenuity, he rescued two struggling baseball franchises. If, like Jesse, debt reduction is your main deal right now, then at least take a small portion of the profits for yourself. Most of the profit distribution will go to crush debt, but a small portion, 1% will go to reward you, perhaps a delicious banana split. Least effort, biggest results. You too must utilize the power of small actions. What is the biggest bang for the buck with the least effort? When it comes to fixing things, we need to build emotional momentum. Similar to going to the gym, if you go back to the gym for the first time in 10 years and work out like a mad dog, you may feel great that first day, but within a day or two, you will be so sore and in so much pain, you will likely never go to the gym again. Momentum rarely occurs after one crazy effort. Momentum builds slowly but relentlessly. Small, repetitive, continuous actions chained together build momentous momentum. Say that one 10 times fast. In his extraordinary book, The Total Money Makeover, Dave Ramsey explains the debt snowball. It's contrary to logic, but it plays exactly into the psyche of all of us human beings. Ramsey tells us that logic would say to pay off our debts with the highest interest rates first, but that doesn't build emotional momentum. It is getting to tear up a statement, any statement, because it is fully paid off, that gives you a sense of momentum and gets you charged up to tackle the next one. Ramsey explains that you should sort all your debts from smallest to biggest, regardless of interest rates. Only when two debts are a similar amount should the one with the highest interest rate be paid first. Ramsey tells us to pay only the minimum on all the debts, except for the one at the top of the list, the smallest one. Then put all your financial power into crushing that first debt as fast as possible. Once that first debt is wiped out, then tackle the next one on the list by adding to the minimum payment with the money you were using to pay the first debt. Once the second debt is paid off, go for the next, adding all the money being used to pay the second debt to the minimum of the third. See how the snowball grows? And see how your enthusiasm and excitement about eradicating debt grows? You will get more and more pleasure from not spending than you once did from spending. Susie and Dave would both be so proud of you. But the trick to Ramsey's method, and Susie's, and mine, and anyone with an iota of sanity, is this. You cannot add new debt as you pay off old. That is just shifting money around, paying down one debt while building another. You need to get your debt freeze on first, and then destroy it once and for all. Take action. Down with debt. Step 1. Start the debt freeze. Stop any recurring payments and kill off anything you don't need. Do whatever it takes to get your monthly nut down to 10% lower than your instant assessment suggests it should be. Step 2. Use 99% of your profit allocation toward wiping out your debt. With that remaining 1%, you still need to celebrate. I know it doesn't amount to much, but you can still reward yourself. Even if you are strapped with debt you are eradicating, you still need to celebrate during the process, and a cash profit distribution to you, however small, helps you do that. And step 3, start the debt snowball. Pay off your smallest outstanding debt first. As you wipe out each bill with recurring payments, use the freed up payments to tackle the next smallest debt. Chapter 8. Find money within your business. Your company has more money than you realize. You just don't know where to find it yet. After delivering a keynote on Profit First, I was invited to a dinner with board members of Vistage, an organization for business owners, presidents, and executives. They call themselves the world's leading chief executive organization. It was a unique situation because instead of standing in front of a few hundred people speaking for 60 minutes and then exiting stage left, now I was sitting at a round table for a few hours to address an onslaught of questions about Profit First. One executive, the only consultant at the table, stated why he believed Profit First wouldn't work. To protect his name, I'll call him Mr. Wrong. He made all of the classic nonsensical arguments. If you don't have profit already, you can't suddenly start taking it, Mr. Wrong scolded, looking around the table for approval. Profit has to be the bottom line, he argued. Startups can't hold back on spending if they want to grow. Blah, blah, blah. Wrong, wrong, wrong. That last myth really annoys me because it's that kind of thinking that prevents business owners not only from benefiting from their hard work and ingenuity, but also it stunts growth. Then another gentleman from Vistage, I'll call him Mr. Innovator, had a light bulb moment and without thinking, blurted out, "Split the truck, split the truck, split the truck." Everyone looked at him as if he were a bit off. And then he explained. He said, "I grew a $50 million company by doing my own version of profit first." Mr. Innovator explained that his company delivered oil to two primary outlets, businesses that stored hundreds of gallons at a time, like Jiffy Lube, and retail stores that put quart containers on the shelves, like Walmart. They delivered the oil using two types of trucks, a tanker to deliver to the Jiffy Lubes of the world, and a shelf truck to deliver to Walmart. Nearly every aspect of their business was duplicated, two trucks, two drivers, two customer service teams, two of everything. "The costs were too high. We were barely surviving," he said. Mr. Innovator knew he had to cut costs in order to achieve his profitability goals. So he challenged himself to cut his costs by at least one-third while still servicing the same number of customers. He kept asking himself that bigger, better question. How can we keep doing what we're doing for one-third of the cost? Then, one day it hit him. "What if we took a box truck and divided it in half?" he recounted. "One side for a tank and the other side for shelves." Now his company could deliver oil to both the Jiffy Lubes and the Walmarts of the world using one type of truck, operated by one driver. Mr. Innovator put the idea in motion and ended up surpassing his goal, cutting expenses nearly in half. This simple shift enabled him to grow his struggling business to a $50 million company with a sweet bottom line. Mr. Wrong never uttered another peep, and Mr. Innovator picked up the check for the entire table with a smile. Money is everywhere. Money can always be found through streamlining and innovation. And that begins with asking the big questions, the impossible questions, the question no one else would ever dare to ask. No one else but you. And if you don't believe my statement about money is everywhere, you will. I'm convinced of it when you read the story about Becky Blanton. I wrote about her in Surge. She's actually the opening story to Surge. Or you can do a little research about her on the web for her time when she was a homeless person. She doesn't talk about how she found money, but I interviewed her subsequently to seeing this TED interview or this TED presentation she did. And it was just fascinating, the system she developed to find money. And she proved, yes, money is everywhere. It's smarter to dig a well than make it rain. I've yet to meet an entrepreneur who hasn't wanted to hire a rainmaker, that magical salesperson who, like the companies they say they can give you access to your great-grandmother Sally's unclaimed fortune, will save the day by bringing in big sale after big sale. Never mind the fact that we, the owners and leaders who love our companies and what we do, are the ultimate rainmakers. It is this top-line approach to solving a cash flow crisis that holds companies back. Cranking up the sales team in order to make it rain is not going to help your company if you don't have efficiencies in place, because ultimately, whatever new client revenue you generate will have corresponding costs, and these are likely to go unchecked. If you want to increase profitability, and you better freaking want to do that, you must first build efficiencies. Focusing solely on increasing sales is like setting up a bunch of rain barrels next to your house and doing some frantic rain dance in a loincloth while ignoring a massive water source beneath your feet. Take Idaho, for example. Idahoans enjoy an average of 17 inches of rainfall each year, 20 inches under the national average. Hence, 95% of the state's water supply comes from underground. The 135-mile-long Big Lost River collects water from the Rocky Mountains as it winds through Idaho and then just disappears as it goes subterranean. The water from the Big Lost River, the Snake River, and other underground water sources collects in the Snake River Aquifer, which measures 400 miles wide. That is enough water to serve the majority of Idaho's agricultural needs. So that Idaho spud you're munching on is thanks to an underground water supply, not some rain dance Idahoans learned on the internet. Albeit, Idahoans know how to get their funk on. Why should you care about Idaho and its underground lakes? Because 95% of your company's profitability is contingent on what goes on beneath the surface after the sales, not what happens in the sky, the sales themselves. and it is what's going on underground that will help you find gobs of money. The profit squeeze. A few years ago, I was asked to keynote the Global Student Entrepreneur Awards in Washington, D.C., where leading collegiate entrepreneurs from all over the world gathered and are recognized for their incredible impact. At breakfast on the morning of the event, I ended up sitting next to Greg Crabtree. Greg is the author of Simple Numbers, Straight Talk, Big Profits. Greg caught my attention immediately, talking with another gentleman at our table about college football. I inserted myself into their discussion, go Hokies, and soon enough the conversation drifted to entrepreneurs and profitability. I remember thinking, hold on, we are talking about college football and profitability? There is a God. And Greg recounted some information he shares in his book about how to maximize profitability. I asked, is there such a thing as too much profit? Is there a ceiling? You always want to expand profit, Greg explained. In fact, you must, because there are outside forces that will continually take your profitability away, your competition. As you find ways to increase profitability, or even if you don't, your competition is doing the same. Everyone is trying to become more profitable. And as businesses become more profitable, the competitive pressure sets in and prices drop to attract more customers. When you figure out a big leap in profitability, the competition will sniff it out, and it's just a matter of time before they do the same thing. Then someone drops prices to get more clients, and everyone else, including you, has to do the same to stay in business. This is how profits get squeezed. We've seen the phenomena Greg outlined over and over. Consider flat panel televisions, for example. They became commercially popular in the early 2000s, but were still a luxury item until around 2005, when the cost of big screen TVs started dropping 25% per year. By the end of the decade, vendors had dropped the prices so significantly that it seemed retailers were practically giving them away. Then, because manufacturing televisions got easier and easier, profits jumped, but only for a short time. It wasn't long before everyone started dropping prices again to capture demand, to the point where it now seems as though a retailer needs to pay you to take a small or last year's flat panel model. James Lee, the chief executive at Syntax Groups Corporation, maker of the Olivia brand of flat panel televisions, said of his competitors, "They go to $3,000, I will go to $2,999. Profit is a slippery animal. When profit margins are big, usually in excess of 20%, people sniff out and almost immediately start to duplicate what you are doing. And they look for ways to do it better, faster, and above all, cheaper than your company. I'm not in any way saying that you should stop investing in efficiency and thereby temporarily increase your profit. I'm saying that even if you think you're good with profit, you're not. The competition will squeeze you eventually, and soon. So keep finding ways to do what you do better, faster, and cheaper. The nice thing is that as you keep your profit allocation percentage consistent, you will automatically be forced to find ways to make it happen. For example, when competition sets in and prices drop, your profit allocation will feel the squeeze, which means it's time to innovate again. Two times the results with half the effort. By now, you figured out that focusing solely on top-line thinking, sales, 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 does not lead to profitability. In fact, more sales without efficiency lead to further inefficiency. In other words, more sales make you less profitable. It's a vicious cycle. So you may need to slow down or halt what you're selling while you look for new efficiencies. Before you can focus on sales, you must first nail efficiency 101. Let me give you a little caveat here. Some people think I'm saying you got to stop selling altogether. No. Now, I'm just saying we so often prioritize sales over efficiencies that efficiencies never happen, and actually it can start crushing a business and put a business in a downward death spiral because the costs get out of control. It's okay to slow down sales. Really, what I mean by that is prioritizing on efficiencies. I think turning the sales spigot off entirely, I think that's a dangerous move. So I just want to correct that potential misunderstanding. Remember the toothpaste analogy? Think of this process as like switching your regular size tube of toothpaste for one of those travel size tubes. How are you going to make it last? Remember, Parkinson's law is your ally. A full tube of toothpaste can last 4 weeks, and so can a tube that is nearly empty. It just requires the balance of frugality, using conservatively, and innovation, twisting, turning, and squeezing your ideas to pull off what no one else even considered before. Efficiency increases your profit margins, or the amount of money you earn as profit on each product or service you offer. Increased profit margins will boost your company's profits without the need for increased sales. And then, when you kick the selling machine back into full gear, which we will discuss later, profits will skyrocket. So the method is simple. Achieve greater efficiency first, then sell more, then improve efficiency even more, and then sell even more. Over time, speed up the back and forth between efficiency and selling until the two happen simultaneously. Making your company more efficient is about more than just nixing extra coffee breaks and redlining your expenses. To tap into the river of profit flowing just under the surface of your company, you need to look at efficiency in every aspect of your business. Serving the same types of great clients with the same or very similar problems and perfecting your solutions so you can use them consistently to fix their problems are two routes of efficiency. You want to duplicate your best clients, those who have a consistent need, and in turn, you want to reduce the variety of things you do to the fewest that will best serve your best clients' needs. Think McDonald's. The company is a money-making machine because they feed hungry people who don't care, at least in the moment, about their health as much as their hunger, with a few products, fries, hamburgers, and breaded chicken. The fewest things you can do repetitively to serve a consistent core customer need, this spells efficiency. I want you to set a massive goal for yourself. Look at every aspect of your business and determine how to get 2 times the results with half the effort. That's a biggie, so I'll say it again. How do you get 2 times the results with half the effort? Effort is financial cost and time cost, your time, your people's time, your software's time, your machine's time. For example, if you own a snow plowing company and currently plow 1 parking lot per hour, I would ask you to go figure out how to plow 2 parking lots, 2 times the results, in 30 minutes, half the time. Your first thought might be, easy for you to say, that's impossible, Mike. You don't know my business, you're nuts. I'm not offended by criticism, not even from those who spout it off without ever cracking open the book, because I know most naysayers are just scared. Maybe you're scared too. Maybe you've made personal sacrifices for your business, sacrifices you may no longer be able to justify because you will have time for your family and friends. Maybe you're afraid that doing more in less time will make your role less significant. Maybe you're worried that your customers may not want to pay you as much if it appears you can do more with less. Whatever the reason, if you believe that it's impossible to increase efficiency in this way, you are trapped in the let the other guy figure it out mode. The thing is, my friend, the other guy will figure it out. It's only a matter of time. If instead you say, let me think about that. Let me find a way. You will set your company on the path to skyrocketing profitability. Why? Because innovation occurs in small steps, big leaps, and everywhere in between. To double the results with half the effort is a big goal that forces big thinking, and it brings about small and big progress, all of which goes to the bottom line. Doing more with fewer resources has had a significant impact on my business. I am very active in Hedgehog Leatherworks, as you already know, and employing Profit First triggered degrees of innovation that I strongly suspect no one else in the leather industry has ever achieved. Removing our ability to buy the traditional expensive equipment used in the leather industry forced us to find new, cheaper ways to get the same, and in many cases, better results. It's amazing what you can pull off when you're scrounging Home Depot, Hobby Lobby, and random junkyards to make what you need. A little duct tape does go a long way. We invented new systems that achieved better results than industry standards at 1/100th the cost. Because we took profit first, we made hundreds of innovations, tweaks, hacks, brand new systems, and everything in between. All because we had to. My editor begged for the details about what we discovered, but because our process is proprietary, I had to kind of leave him hanging. Sorry, Kashuk. I don't want you leaving the book industry to start a competing leather business. But I did kind of riff on this earlier. So, Kashuk, if you're listening to the audiobook, I did give you a little tip what we did with clicker presses and molds. Most entrepreneurs focus only on tiny improvements. How do I do this a couple minutes faster? Small questions yield only small answers. You want both the incremental improvements and the landslide discoveries, and you'll find both of those with big questions. Snow plowing a parking lot 5 minutes faster is not going to make much of an impact on your bottom line. Neither will skipping your coffee break or just holding it when you need to go to the bathroom. But the more you focus on substantially improving efficiency, such as a snowplow that can move snow twice as fast, the closer you'll get to achieving double the results with half the effort. And you'll discover all the small steps that collectively get you closer to the big win. This gain in efficiency is amplified the more you sell. That is the power of percentages. Because you now plow every parking lot more efficiently, every new account is an opportunity for increased profit. Remember Mr. Innovator? He asked, how can I cut costs by 1/3 and still service the same amount of customers? Split the truck, split the truck, split the truck. Here's another truck story. Did you know that United Parcel Service, UPS, trucks almost always take right turns? In 2006, UPS dared to ask the efficiency question about fuel costs. They discovered that the less time UPS drivers spent in left turn lanes, the less fuel they burned waiting at lights and across traffic, and the less idle time there was for each driver. UPS is now experiencing a savings of $6 million a year from the change. The Brown Truck Company didn't stop with their efficiency discovery. Next time you see a driver delivering a package, look at him and try to spot his keys. Let me give you a hint. They're not in his pocket. That's a banana. UPS drivers found that fumbling for their keys in their pockets when they got back into the truck cost them 5 to 10 seconds or more every time. UPS figured out that it was more efficient to keep their keys hanging from their pinky fingers. Now a UPS driver makes a quick flip of his wrist and the keys are in hand. Multiply that saved 5 to 10 seconds by 50 stops a day and 5 gazillion drivers, and you have a very huge savings indeed. And they didn't stop there either. UPS also found they could save millions by washing their trucks once every 2 days rather than every day. Over time, this gave them huge savings in time, energy, and water, and the trucks looked just as shiny. Look, it may seem impossible when you first hear my challenge, but if you've never seriously asked yourself, how can I get 2 times the results with half the effort? How do you know that you can't? You might be missing your own no left turn, pinky flip, don't wash yourself efficiency miracle and not even realize it. Chip away at expenses. Wesley Rocha didn't take a raise in 10 years. The founder of LinkU Systems, a company that provides marketing services, tools, and website design for the real estate industry and small businesses, Wesley watched his company grow and his income remained stagnant. I didn't understand why it seemed like even though we would make more money, we never had any left over. I felt stressed about finances all the time. Wesley finished reading Profit First in a weekend and realized quickly that his expenses were out of control. I couldn't immediately implement cutting costs without grossly damaging projects or the business. I literally needed all of my employees and 90% of everything we'd been paying for because we're stuck and committed to it, Wesley said. I was afraid of what could break or go wrong if I implemented Profit First too quickly. So I had to start thinking about how I could eliminate expenses carefully. Little by little, Wesley started chipping away at his expenses. Over the past year, unfortunately, I've had to release 6 employees, but I've been able to replace their efforts by eliminating unprofitable products and services, recreating and optimizing processes, and streamlining other portions of the business, Wesley explained. Now I am able to determine what expenses allowed for a project before we take it on. Otherwise, we have to figure out another solution. Figure out another solution. Music to my ears. Not, we have to find more money to cover it. Nope. Time to crack the knuckles and find another way out of the corn maze, because the airlift ain't coming. In the first year of implementing Profit First, Wesley was able to double his profits, which allowed him to increase his annual income by approximately 46% between salary and ultimately the profit disbursements. I've been able to set aside money for taxes and use profits to help toward a down payment to buy a house, which before would have been impossible. There's that word again, impossible. At first, Wesley thought he couldn't possibly cut expenses and continue to serve his clients, and yet, after a year, he was able to do just that, which allowed him to do his other impossible thing, something he hadn't been able to do in more than 10 years of kicking ass in business, save for a down payment on a house. In every year past, despite growth, he never had any money left over. And yet, by cutting expenses and streamlining his system, he found money in his business. You don't have to slash and burn the moment you put this book down. You can take it slow. Just get started. Fire bad clients. If you've read The Pumpkin Plan, you know that while the book is outwardly marketed as a system to help business leaders grow their companies into industry giants, it's secretly a book about efficiency. Letting go of clients who suck us dry and eat up our profit margins is a way of making space for clients we can serve exceptionally well by doing what we do best and with fewer resources. It is all about improving not only the top line, but the bottom line too. A study facilitated by the Chicago-based growth consulting firm Strategex analyzed the revenue, cost, and profit breakdown for 1,000 companies. What they found was nothing short of a duh moment, as in the duh, I already knew this, but I still haven't done anything about it in my own business because I'm a glutton for punishment type of duh. Strategex sorted the clients for each company into 4 sections, in descending order based on revenue. For example, if a company had 100 clients, the 25 clients who generated the most revenue were put in the top quartile, the next 25 highest revenue generating clients in the second quartile, and so on. Strategex found that the top quartile generated 89% of the total revenue, while the lowest quartile only accounted for a meager 1% of total revenue. It gets worse. The study found that each group of clients required pretty much the same amount of effort, cost, and time. This means that it took the same amount of effort to serve a big revenue client as it did a client who barely affected revenue at all. Then came the awkward gulp moment. Strategex's profit analysis showed that the top quartile generated 150% of a company's profit. The 2 middle quartiles were effectively break-even, and the bottom quartile, the one that generated 1% of the total revenue, resulted in a profit loss of 50%. In the end, the profits generated from the top clients are used in part to pay for the losses accrued in serving the bottom clients. I'm sure you know this scenario all too well. Those clients who barely pay you peanuts, yet constantly complain about how much you charge and how you do nothing right. The clients who demand you rework everything you've done for the 3rd time and then never pay you for your work or never pay you on time. Those clients are costing you money. Get rid of them, fast. Dumping any client who makes you money, even if it's the worst client in the world, may seem counterintuitive at first. But never forget what I said earlier. All revenue is not the same. If you remove your worst unprofitable clients and the now unnecessary costs associated with them, you will see a jump in profitability and a reduction in stress, often within a few weeks. Equally important, you will have more time to pursue and clone your best clients. I've lost count of how many readers have shared stories about how their top line and bottom line improved after they implemented this and other growth strategies I revealed in the Pumpkin Plan. I know that sounds like bragging. I swear to God, it's not. The system isn't some miracle I came up with. It's just simple math. I know how scary it feels to dump any client when you're scrambling to cover this week's payroll, especially if you fought hard to get that client in the first place. But remember, profit is about the percentages, not a single number. So take it easy on yourself. Start by dumping one rotten little pumpkin in your patch, the one you occasionally fantasize about leaving on a deserted island or shipping off to Mars. The emotional distraction that client caused you and your staff will disappear immediately. The profits you earned from other clients and were spending to keep this bad client on board will now stay in your pocket. And since his special requirements no longer need to be serviced, you have time and headspace to find another, better client. An ideal client, a clone of your very best clients. Clone your best clients. Just for a moment, I want you to think of your favorite client, the call you will always take, the person or company you say yes to without hesitation. This is the client who pays you what you're worth on time without question. This is the client who trusts you, respects you, and follows instructions. This is the client you love and who loves you. Now imagine that this client had 5 identical twin companies that all wanted to work with you. Wouldn't that boost your business? Wouldn't it be easy to serve those clients? Wouldn't it help to keep your bottom line healthy? Now imagine 10 clones or 100 clones. For almost any B2B business in the world, landing 100 clones of its best client would put it at the front of the pack. It would dominate. The same is true for B2C businesses. If a mere 10% of their clients behaved like their number one client, those businesses would rule too. Having clients with similar needs and very similar behaviors offers a few magical profit-making benefits. First, you will become super efficient because you now serve very few but consistent needs rather than an excessive array of varying needs. Second, you will love working with your clients, which means you will naturally and automatically provide better service. We cater to the people we care about. And third, marketing will become automatic. Birds of a feather flock together, for real. And that means your best clients hang out with other business leaders who have the best client qualities you're looking for. Your best clients are awesome, remember? You love them, and they love you. And that means they will talk you up every chance they get. Clones of your best clients are the very definition of efficiency, which is why they are like gold. Find them, nurture them, and then find out where even more best client clones hang out and cultivate them too. The Pareto overlap. You may be familiar with the Pareto principle, commonly known as the 80-20 rule. For the history buffs, Vilfredo Federico Damaso Pareto was an Italian economist who studied the distribution of wealth in Italy in the late 1800s. He discovered that 20% of the Italian population owned 80% of the land. He then looked at his garden and observed that 20% of the pea pods contained 80% of the peas. Then he looked down at his feet and exclaimed, OMG, I own 5 pairs of clogs, yet I wear these Superfly boots 80% of the time. I made that part up. Pareto's principle also applies to your clients, in that 20% of them yield 80% of your revenue. And it goes further. 80% of your profit is derived from 20% of the products or services you offer. The key to this advanced strategy is to connect the two, your clients and your offering. Some of your top clients buy most of your profitable offerings. Some of your top clients go for the offering with the lowest profit margin. Likewise, some of your weakest clients consistently purchase your profitable stuff, and some are just weak all the way around, buying the same no-profit stuff over and over again. Once you see the overlap, the decisions become very easy. Get rid of the bad clients who only want your least profitable products and services. You are losing money here, catering to clients or customers who are not a good fit for your company. Find a new way to manage the weak clients who do buy your most profitable offerings. Often, those bad clients can become better clients if you meet with them to set new expectations and methods of communication. Meet with your top clients who don't buy your profitable offerings too. Find out how you can deliver profitable stuff to them. When you focus on profit first, even when choosing the clients and customers you are willing to work with, you increase your profit dramatically. Not only do you save money by cutting expenses related to serving weak clients who don't buy profitable offerings, you also free up your time, energy, and creativity to focus on the clients you love, who bring in the profit. Applied to your client base, the Pareto principle is an advanced profit-first technique that does double duty. You save money and gain profit. Gotta love that. Sell smart. I've already mentioned Ernie, my long guy, briefly, but I want you to know a little more about his story. It speaks to how fast things can go down the upselling rabbit hole. In the fall, I pay my lawn service to clean up all of the leaves in our yard. A few years ago, Ernie, the owner of the business, knocked on my door. He said, "I noticed that there are leaves in the gutters." He offered to remove them for a fee. And I, my friends, was what they called an easy upsell. Ernie had just expanded his service offering, easy money. To complete the job, Ernie bought some ladders for his truck. While Ernie was up on the roof, though, he realized he needed a tool to snake out the downspouts. He also spotted more opportunities, damaged shingles, a crack in the chimney, and a soft spot in the roof, a sign of rotting wood. Again, he asked if I wanted them fixed. I said yes. And he ran out and picked up some roofing tools, a downspout snake tool, bandsaws, cement, and brick supplies, and hired temporary labor. Ernie came back near the end of the day and pushed through to get it finished. He even bought floodlights to keep the area lit as dusk approached. At the end of the day, I paid $1,500 for all the work. Not bad for Ernie, considering he gets paid only $200 to clean the lawn. but the $1,500 he earned cost Ernie an investment of about $2,000 for tools and supplies that day, plus a lot of driving back and forth and the cost of hiring labor. Ernie lost money on me, but he grew his sales by a lot. Tomorrow, he intends to use his new equipment and tools to take care of other clients and will, in theory, earn his money back and then some. Problem is, that rarely happens. As the bills mount, the pressure grows to sell more and more, and you end up working on projects in which you have limited experience and sometimes little interest. As the variety of things you do increases, you need to buy more tools and equipment and hire more specialized labor. And none of this gets used to its maximum potential because you do many different things, not one thing. Your stuff sits around there unused. While you rake lawns, your ladders just lie there. As you fix roofs, the leaf blowers just sit on your truck. You get stuck in the survival trap and end up not doing a very good job at any one thing. For example, when Ernie wrapped up for the day, he said, "I'll be back early tomorrow to clean the lawn again." Why? Because he threw the leaves from the gutters onto the lawn that he had just cleaned, as well as shingles and other stuff. His additional work required that he actually redo his original work, while all the new gear he bought just sat in the truck not being used. What's efficient about that? Nada. Across the street, my neighbors Bill and Liza hire a different guy, Sean, to clean up their leaves in the fall. He also charges $200. On the same day Ernie worked on my house and earned $1,500, Sean serviced four more properties and also knocked on the door of two other properties that, by the look of their lawns, needed his help. I suspect that if Ernie and Sean had had a beer together that night, Ernie would have boasted about doing 1.5 times the sales Sean pulled in. But Sean would have ended up paying for the drinks. Sean has achieved efficiency and recognizes it as the secret sauce of profitability. Getting more of the same things done with better and better results using fewer and fewer resources. Selling more is the most difficult way to increase profits because in the best case scenario, the percentages stay the same. And in the worst case, more common scenarios, expenses generated to support sales increase faster, resulting in smaller percentages and smaller profit margins. So let's just be clear here. When I say selling more is the most difficult way to increase profits, I'm saying selling more variety. Once you have honed in like a laser missile on that one type of client and serving them that one type of solution that you have to offer, selling more and more of that, that is access to perpetual profits. I'm saying selling a variety of things slows down or prevents profits. We've got to be laser focused. Sales without first putting efficiency measures and systems in place is a dangerous game that only leads to bigger expenses and fewer ideal clients. Applying efficiency strategies to your top line, firing bad clients, cloning the good ones, refining your offerings to get the most out of your resources, and then selling smart is a surefire way to increase profitability. Take action. Let go of dead weight. Step 1. Focusing on one aspect of your business, one that benefits your best customers, challenge yourself to figure out how to get 2 times the results for half the effort. Step 2. Using the parameters outlined in this chapter, identify your weakest clients. Fire the weakest links. I'm not suggesting that you get into take this job and shove it mode. Don't burn any bridges. Just politely end the relationships. You're not dating anymore, but you can still be friends. Chapter 9, Profit First, Advanced Techniques. You are invited to come to ProfitCon. It may well be the first conference in the world to be all about profitability. I started the conference in 2015, and to the best of my ability, I couldn't find any other conference like it. At our first meetup, we had just accountants, bookkeepers, and business coaches who were learning ways to help their clients and themselves increase profitability. It has subsequently grown to include all types of entrepreneurs, accounting professionals, and business experts who want to learn and share strategies on profitability. And I'm not kidding about this. We want you there. I think you'll find it to be an amazing event. It'll steep you in profit, and it'll surround you with other people that are doing the same as you, improving the profitability of their business. And we always share the latest, greatest, newest things. So if you want to check it out, you can go to our website. It's profitcon.us. That's P-R-O-F-I-T-C-O-N, ProfitCon, profitfirstprofessionals.us, or you can go to profitfirstprofessionals.com and click on the upcoming events. But seriously, come to the event. I'd love to meet you in person. At our most recent conference, Aaron Moger, we call her Mo, from our office was delivering a Q&A presentation on Profit First when one of the attendees raised his hand and said the standard Profit First foundational five accounts did not work with his business due to its unique requirements. Mo looked down from the stage and said, "When in doubt, add an account." There you have it. Maybe you have a seasonal business in which money spikes and sags. Another account, specifically a drip account, would help here. Maybe you need to outlay big cash for equipment every so often. Then an equipment account would help. To take Profit First to the next level and customize it for your business, it is pretty simple. Follow Mo's rule. Add another account. When you start adding new accounts to suit your unique needs, consider yourself an advanced user of Profit First. Here's the deal. You're about to learn the Profit First equivalent of running your first marathon. You need to be in shape and all stretched out before you do it. So please do proceed with reading, but don't implement this stuff until you've completed at least two quarters, that's 180 days plus, with the core stuff you learned about Profit First. Are you making your biweekly allocations? Are you amassing some profit, no matter how small? Have you experienced a few profit distributions? Are you participating in some form of accountability? If you answered yes, a real yes, to all four, if you've mastered not breaking the rules, you're good to put on your running shoes and move forward. You started out taking it easy with a walk around the block. Then you did the jog, walk thing. You started running faster and for longer distances. Now you're one of them, a runner. Time to train for the marathon. Advanced simplification. A few years after implementing Profit First for myself, I realized that I could really take my money management to the next level if I tweaked my system further. The stuff I taught you in the beginning of this book was working well, but there were certain times I still needed to do the accounting work to understand the financial health of my business. Sometimes my deposits weren't made as a result of sales. They were simply reimbursements for expenses. Other times, a client paid a wad of cash up front for work that I would do in dribs and drabs over the next year. Sometimes I needed to make big purchases, and I wanted to save for them. Mine wasn't the only business that needed tweaks. Everyone I consulted with needed them. So do you. And the process is simple. You need just a few more accounts. While it may not seem that opening additional accounts simplifies anything, it absolutely does. Whenever you can get a clear, accurate picture of how much you have to spend on a specific aspect of your business, you will make better decisions and be less likely to commit to projects, vendors, and expenditures that do not fall in line with the balances in those accounts. Likewise, if you know exactly how much cash is flowing into your business at any given time, you can make better decisions about where you need to focus your efforts. You already have your five foundational Profit First accounts open: income, profit, tax, owner's comp, and OpEx, plus your two no-temptation accounts that don't get touched, the profit hold and the tax hold accounts in a separate bank. Here are the additional accounts, contingent on your business needs, that I recommend you consider opening. The vault. Let's start with accumulating some cash, because that is my happy place. Thanks, Susie Orman. The vault is an ultra-low-risk, interest-bearing account that you can use for short-term emergencies. At a certain point, leaving 50% in your profit account to act as a rainy day fund is not prudent because the money flow is a little unpredictable. A bad quarter won't contribute much to the profit account. Then you take 50% out for a profit share, and now that profit account reserve might be too small to sustain a big business. Every business should have a three-month reserve, meaning that if not a single sale came in, all costs could still be covered for 3 months. That's a quarter. The question isn't whether you will have a dark day, your supplier goes out of business, your biggest client goes bankrupt, your best employees leave to start a direct competitor, and your clients decide to go with them. The question is when. The vault is there for that. When you set up the vault, you must also establish certain rules for its use. What I mean is that when you have a situation so dire that you need to access this money, you also have instructions written in advance on how to proceed. For example, if the money is pulled out due to a drop in sales, you will pre-plan that besides just trying to get more sales, you will also cut all the related costs in your business within 2 months if things haven't improved. Few people have a discipline to think clearly or act appropriately in times of panic, and that's why we document a simple set of instructions for ourselves in advance. The idea behind the vault and the entire Profit First system is that it puts your decisions well out in front of any money crisis. Your business dynamics may not, in fact, improve, but your decision-making will be much further out in front of the actual financial impact. So the goal of the vault is not to buy time. It may afford some time to address unexpected challenges, but it is really about forcing important decisions early so your business doesn't go into a cash crisis, you know, back to the survival trap. Stocking account. This is an account for big purchases and to fund the stocking of your inventory. For example, my friend JB's roof decking company, called Roof Deck Solutions, sells the materials contractors need to complete their projects. JB includes basic nuts and bolts with each order, usually 50 or 100 of each. Yet his supplier requires a minimum order of 10,000 at a time, which costs JB roughly $5,000. Each order will last JB 10 months or longer. So he set up what he calls a large purchase account to which he allocates 1/20, that's $250, of the funds he will need for the next big nuts and bolts purchase. Why 1/20? Because he knows he'll need the next order in 10 months, and he is on the 10-25 rhythm. 10 months, 2 times a month, equals 20 allocations before the next big purchase. By doing this, JB is able to chip away at the big bill before it happens. Then, when it's time to cough up that $5,000 for the next big nuts and bolts order, he's ready. In the past, this bill caught him off guard and he had to scramble to cover it. Now he barely feels the $250 he allocates to his stocking account twice a month. Pass-through account. Some businesses receive income from customers that is not to be allocated for profit or owner's comp. Sometimes you may provide a service or a product to your customer at cost or near cost, and other times you may be reimbursed for costs outright. For example, I travel a lot for my work, and in almost every case, my clients reimburse my travel costs. That income is not allocated to cover payroll or added to my profit account. It's a pass-through and goes directly into this account, and then off to the corresponding vendor to pay the bill. If I've paid the bill in advance, the money is deposited into the pass-through account